This is the W5BSA repeater. DL-123.
This is Marty, WV5Y.
It's once again time for another edition of the Houston InsatNet. This net meets on Tuesdays to discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related items. This is net number 1637, and it's 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, November the 11th, 2025, which in UTC time is November the 12th, 2025 at 0200. This is a directed net, and all calls should go through net control. And this net is dedicated to Andy McAllister, W5ACM. Okay, thanks to Joe, W5BSA. We're on the 145.19 repeater in West Houston. Also on the 443.325 repeater in Katy. And both of those machines have a PL tone of 123.0. And then there's links to the 146.7 and its networked repeaters. And, of course, that repeater is downtown. And then when the connections are working, there is the AMSAT DMR Tower Group, 98006. YSF Fusion is 11689. The All-Star Node, 572580. And then there's Echolink, and that's over at Star AMSAT Star. And I will now take any check-ins.
Hello, Delta 5, apply to Vet Julius, KD5PQJ, Herbert, West Houston.
Whiskey, Delta 5, Juliet Romeo Delta, WD5-3RD call, Jersey Village.
Okay, very good. We got Herbert, KD5PQJ in West Houston. Good evening, Herbert. Got a good signal there. And Carl, I know your audio might be a little bit loud there, WD5JRD up there in Jersey Village. Of course, I know my radio here is starting to have some issues here to its age, I think. It's now actually receiving the repeater on 145.193 instead of 190, and transmitting into it with a little bit of a 3 kilohertz offset. So, things happen over the years. After about 30 years, I guess things change. Let's see. This is Marty, WV5Y with Houston AMSAT.net. And I want to remind everybody, you can call and check into the net with a quick phone check-in to 713-467-9870. You can send an APRS message to West Virginia 5 Yankee, no dashes, no numbers, as Andy used to like to say. And then the email, it's wv5y@comcast.net. Okay, one more check, stand by. Do we have any more check-ins? Okay, well, we're going to start here with a little bit of information from the South Texas Moon Launch Team. Of course, they have their monthly meeting on the second Wednesday of the month, and that's at 4:30 p.m. here local, and then they get down to business and have a meeting on the Internet, and that's over at k5wh.net/zoom. That happens at 8 p.m., and that's thanks to Walter, so we want to thank him, k5wh. And there was some activity out of the South Texas Moon Launch Team this past weekend on Saturday. They launched a balloon from the Crossroads Hamfest there. And that was down in Louise, Texas, down just about almost past Horton, almost down to Victoria. They did have a nice live stream going, so we actually got to see Walter release the balloon, and the balloon didn't get tangled in any trees or buildings, and went up, disappeared, and was never heard from again. Walter, Walter thinks maybe the fact that it was pretty cloudy, so high humidity, so he thinks maybe condensation on the balloon might have water droplets stayed attached to it, caused it some weight, and caused it to come down to the ground. That's his latest theory, so we'll take that one. And he said there should be another launch here coming, though, before too long, so we'll stay tuned to that. And, of course, the W5BSA balloon that was launched from the Boy Scout Jamboree is still up and around. It's gone around the world one time now and is now back over South America. It took it a little while. It took it about 3 weeks to make one revolution around the world. And the south of Hawaii headed east, and it kind of started heading southeast. And it took a little bit dip there to the south, and then got over land over South America. And now it looks like it has changed direction again, and is currently headed south. So we'll be watching that and see what it does. And, of course, you can track that over at appers.fi, and just look for W5BSA. Okay, this is Marty, WP5Y, with the Houston AmFest, the Houston AmSatNet. And let's see here. We're going to go over to the AmSat News Service bulletins, and this is ANS bulletin number 313, and this week's editor is Mitch Ahrensdorf, AD0HJ. The AmSat News Service bulletins are a free weekly news and information service of AmSat, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation. ANS publishes news related to amateur radio in space, including reports on activities of a worldwide group of amateur radio operators who share an active interest in designing, building, launching, and communicating through analog and digital amateur radio satellites. And in the news feed over on www.amsat.org, publishes news of amateur radio in space as soon as our volunteers can post it. So please send any amateur satellite news or reports to ans-editor@amsat.org. Okay, if you'd like to see the AmSat News Service bulletins show up in your inbox, you can sign up for a free email delivery, and that's over joining the ANS list. And to join the list, you go to mailman.amsat.org/Pastorius/lists/ans.amsat.org. Okay, well, I don't think that URL has changed since back when Ed was doing the net. And that was, hey, the internet hadn't even been around too long after that since then. So it's been a while. Okay, SpaceX Bandwagon-4 mission places Silversat-1 in orbit with a rideshare payload. And SpaceX launched its Bandwagon-4 rideshare mission on November the 2nd at 0509 UTC from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station, deploying 18 satellites into a mid-inclination low-Earth orbit. The flight is part of SpaceX's dedicated mid-inclination rideshare program, complementing the Transporter series that serves sun-synchronous orbit customers. All the spacecraft were successfully released from the Falcon 9 upper stage approximately 75 minutes after liftoff. The manifest included Severosat-1, an amateur radio satellite built by Sevro University in the Czech Republic, in partnership with Mendel University in Brno, and Brno University of Technology.
CL-123.
The 48-kilogram microsatellite carries a 9600 G3RU GFSK digipeater and also an AX.25 telemetry on 436.025 megahertz, and those were coordinated through the IARU. First signals were received shortly after deployment, with amateur operators reporting telemetry and digipeated packets and uploaded frames to the SatNOGS network. Satellite supports student research, hands-on engineering education, and amateur radio experimentation, including an Earth imaging payload and an optical reflector system for laser technology trials. The largest spacecraft on the mission was a synthetic aperture radar, or SAR, imaging satellite for South Korea's 25 Defense Reconnaissance Program. This continues South Korea's partnership with SpaceX to deploy a constellation of independent surveillance satellites following earlier launches on previous bandwagon missions. The spacecraft is expected to provide high-resolution radar imagery to support national security and intelligence activities. Commercial Earth Observation Company ICEYE launched three additional SAR satellites for the Emirati firm Space 42, expanding the Foresight constellation for regional surveillance and environmental monitoring. Weather intelligence provider Tomorrow.io also flew two spacecraft to enhance its global atmospheric sensing network, supporting improved forecasting and climate modeling applications. Commercial space station developer VAST deployed its Hafen demo spacecraft, a 500-kilogram technology demonstrator designed to validate systems for the upcoming Hafen 1 private station. The satellite will test avionics, communications, propulsion, and power systems in orbit. In addition, StarCloud launched StarCloud 1, a technology demonstration spacecraft build as the first on-orbit artificial intelligence compute node featuring an advanced NVIDIA processor intended to run large language models in space. Bandwagon 4 mission demonstrates the increasing diversity of spacecraft utilizing commercial rideshare launches spanning defense, scientific, commercial, and amateur radio missions. With Severosat 1 now active on orbit, radio amateurs are encouraged to monitor 436.025 MHz and submit reception reports as commissioning continues. You can read the full article over at spacenews.com/SpaceX-launches-4th, that's F-O-U-R-T-H, dash bandwagon dash rideshare dash mission. And we want to thank Jeff Faust of Space News and the Libra Space community for that information. And also, we want to thank Bruce, KK5VO, for making tonight's URLs available over at our website, which is at www.amsatnet.com. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston AmSatNet. CatSat is to open microwave linear transponder access for the amateur radio community. The CatSat team has announced that preparations are underway to open public operation of the spacecraft's linear transponder, offering the amateur radio community a new microwave band satellite resource. CatSat, a 6U CubeSat, so that's six of those little cubes all together, developed and flown by students, faculty, and staff at the University of Arizona in partnership with Freefall Aerospace and Rincon Research, has been on since July of 2024 and is now entering the phase of its mission focused on community engagement and technology demonstration. CatSat was launched aboard a Firefly Aerospace Alpha rocket from Vandenberg Space Force Base as part of NASA's CubeSat Launch Initiative. Measuring roughly the size of a family-sized cereal box, the spacecraft carries a suite of experimental payloads, including a novel inflatable antenna capable of enabling large aperture communication from a small satellite platform. In addition to ionospheric monitoring via high-frequency radio measurements and imaging of the Earth, CatSat includes a linear transponder for amateur radio, extending the University of Arizona's long legacy in space science down to hands-on student involvement. The satellite orbits Earth in a nearly sun-synchronous polar orbit, circling the globe approximately every 90 minutes. As part of its student-driven mission, CatSat is demonstrating how cutting-edge antenna systems and commercial off-the-shelf radio hardware can support meaningful research and amateur communications from a compact form factor. The mission is funded by the University of Arizona Office and the Vice President for Research and the Arizona Space Institute, with additional support from industry partners. When the linear transponder is active, CatSat listens. The uplink is on 5.663 gigahertz. That's way up there. And it transmits on 10.47 gigahertz. That's the downlink. That's even further up there. And that provides approximately a 200 kilohertz of bandwidth. So, yeah, that'll be good when they get that latest transponder there, the for AMSAT, and we'll be able to hopefully copy that when they get that thing working. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, with the Houston AmSatNet. And let's see here. Actually, we lost our place for just a second. Oh, there's only 7 weeks left to get your coin. So you can celebrate the 40th anniversary of amateur radio on human spaceflight and help support Golf and Fox Plus. And annual memberships start at only $120 for the AmSat President's Club. So you can join the AMSAT Presence Club today and help keep amateur radio in space. The URL is www.amsat.org/join-v-amsat-presidents-club.
DL-123.
Okay, let's get back to finishing up here about CANSAT. The downlink is on 10.47 gigahertz. The uplink is on 5.663 gigahertz with a 200 kilohertz bandwidth. Patch antennas. Y face offer roughly 60 degree beam coverage, and the attitude control system can point the antenna footprint at ground stations for up to 10 minutes per pass. Power considerations limit each activation to about 15 minutes, a balance that allows the spacecraft to support both mission science and amateur communications. Early on orbit demonstrations used a 1 meter C-band uplink dish and a 6.1 meter X-band downlink dish to confirm transponder functionality, successfully relaying some Morse code. The CATSAT team is now constructing a more accessible ground station using a 1 meter class commercial antenna to show that amateur access is practical with reasonably sized equipment. Operators will be able to monitor scheduled updates, informally known as the 5 and dime plan, being 5 and 10 gigahertz, through the CATSAT mission website. Commissioning passes targeting the CATSAT ground stations in Tucson took place on October 29th and November the 2nd, with one final activation scheduled for November the 9th at approximately 7:50 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, or UTC-7, just hours after this bulletin's publication. As testing continues, dates may shift as the team evaluates performance and power budget constraints. Operators can follow activation plans and future opportunities at catsat.arizona.edu.
W5BSA repeater.
Okay, you can read the full announcement over there for CATSAT, and that's at catsat.arizona.edu/news/catsat-team-preparing-public-linear-transponder-operations. And we want to thank the CATSAT team and the University of Arizona for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AMSAT net. Okay, we're a little past quarter of the hour, but we're going to take a quick standby and see who we've had checking into the net so far. Okay, we did hear from Andrew, KC5LWI, and he's down there in Galveston, and he rang us up on the old landline there right before the net. So we appreciate Andrew giving us a call, and I hope he's having a good evening there. And we talked to Charlie, K5VNG, a little earlier in the week. So let's see, we got to check him in there. He's over in West Houston. We got Dale, WD0AKO. He's up there in Moorhead, Minnesota. And I'm sure it's a lot colder tonight than it has been like last week. See, he does the backup archiving of the audio for the website, and so we appreciate that from Dale, because we have had to use it once or twice in the past. All All right, we've got Vern at W0RCR out there in Wentzville, Missouri. And thanks to him, he transmits our net on 1.860 megahertz, a full carrier AM, as he likes to say. And that's at 5:30 p.m. and 9 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays. So we appreciate Vern putting us on the top band there on the weekend, especially since this is the time of the year when 160 meters starts to excel. And then we got Kai. We heard from Kai in 6ZZO. He's one of our podcast listeners, and he calls and checks in there. So we appreciate hearing from Kai, and he's out there in McKinleyville, California. All right, from the Internet Relay Chat System, we have Ken, AK0A, Clay, KG4OZW, and then there's probably Rachie's over there too, so good evening to her. We have Brian, KG4WIJ, Renee, NZ9T, and Bob, KAWX, and then we've also got W8QHP. Clay out there active on the Internet Relay Chat, so good evening once again to him. Okay, from Echo Link, we've got Mitch, 80HJ. He's up there in Jackson, Minnesota. And, of course, thanks to Mitch, he does the Wednesday night AmSatNet, and that net takes place on DMR. It's on digital. So you can go over to the AmSat DMR Digital Dot Group of 98006 or YSF Fusion. It's 11689. And then I think the All-Star node and stuff is probably also working too when those things are going. So we appreciate Mitch putting on that net. And that's at 9 p.m. Central Time. And I'd like to discuss people doing roves out there, making grid squares available, and letting us know how Mitch has been doing on his roves that he's been taking. So we appreciate Mitch putting that net on there on Wednesday nights. Okay, we want to say good evening to Damien, AG9P. He's up there in Oconto, Wisconsin. And I'm sure it's chilly there also. We've got Bruce, KK5VO. He's down here just north of Houston up there in Roman Forest. And we've got Ron, KF0UPN. So good evening to Ron, and welcome. We got you checked in to the Houston AmSatNet. Okay, and once again, Bruce's announcement to let us know is URLs for this evening are available and located at amsatnet.com. And, of course, if you want to make any awards or get some certificates for making satellite contacts, since Bruce is the AmSat Awards guy, in addition to being the Board of Directors member, he does that stuff and has put info on that on our website, so check that out. And then there's more info on getting awards and certificates for making satellite contacts over at www.amsat.org. And then you can also find all kinds of great info over there, like the status of the satellites, which ones are working, which ones are not working, the frequencies that they're on, the uplink frequencies and downlink frequencies, and the PL tones required to get into them. And then there's information on when they figure that out for next year. And then there's also the store, so you can even buy satellite antennas. And so that's over at www.amsat.org. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y with the Houston AmSatNet. Eris is to mark 25 years of International Space Station with a special worldwide slow scan TV event coming in November. was the second one, the second event in November that was coming up, and we're just about at the time where it's going to start. Let's see, Amateur Radio on the International Space Station, ARIS, will commemorate the 25th anniversary of continuous human presence aboard the International Space Station with a special worldwide slow scan television, or SSTV, event in mid-November. The ISS has been continuously inhabited since November the 2nd, 2000, marking a major milestone in human spaceflight and international cooperation.
BL-123.
ARIS, the first educational payload on the station, continues to play a key role in inspiring students, supporting a STEM engagement, and connecting the global amateur radio community with astronauts in orbit. The series of 30 SSTV event, entitled ISS at 25 and Scouts, will feature 12 SSTV images celebrating the station's 25-year milestone and scouting. Okay, transmissions are scheduled to begin Wednesday, November the 12th, around 17:30 UTC, and continue through Thursday, November the 20th, time to be determined. And the downlink will occur on 145.800 MHz FM using the PB120 mode, following the standard ARIS pattern of approximately 2 minutes of transmission, followed by 2 minutes off. And let's see, there will be a planned pause in images, and that will occur to support an ARIS school contact with Azerbaijan on November the 16th at 1450 UTC. Radio amateurs and listeners worldwide are encouraged to participate as ISS STV events are accessible to stations with a broad range of equipment. Many operators successfully receive images using only a handheld VHF radio and a phone-based decoding app, while more advanced satellite stations can produce particularly clean results by pointing their antennas and keeping them pointed at the satellite or the ISS. And the SSTV events continue to be a popular entry point for newcomers interested in amateur space communication. Of course, once you do get a good picture, or at least a 50% picture, participants may upload their best received images to the ARIS SSTV portal, and that's over at ARIS-USA.org/ARIS_SSTV, and then request a commemorative event certificate. Submitted images must be single, unedited SSTV frames in GIF, JPEG, or PNG format, limited to 800 by 800 pixels at 800 kilobits. That's a big B, kilobytes. Okay, once the image is uploaded, the operators will be prompted to request their personalized certificate. And because submissions are only accepted for a short time after the conclusion of the event, prompt participation is encouraged. And in keeping with past ARIS activities, operators may also request a traditional ARIS QSL card to confirm SSTV reception. I got mine. QSL request must be mailed to the appropriate regional bureau with a self-addressed stamped envelope or sufficient return postage. Details and mailing addresses for each world region are available over at www.airs.org/qsl-cards.html. Operators should include the date, time, frequency, and mode with their report. Additional updates and operating details will be posted on www.airs.org and Airs social media channels, i.e. Facebook, as the event approaches. AMSAT congratulates Airs and the ISS program on 25 years of continuous human presence aboard the station and encourages radio amateurs everywhere to join in this special commemorative SSTV celebration honoring the ISS legacy and the role of amateur radio in space education. And we will thank Amateur Radio on the International Space Station, or AIRS, for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, and the Houston AmSatNet. All right, at this juncture, we're going to take a standby here for just a minute, and we're going to see if we have any more check-ins. So any other check-ins to the Houston AmSatNet, please come now. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, and the Houston AmSatNet. There is an AI fix from Earth that restores the James Webb Telescope clarity, and no astronauts were needed. NASA's James Webb Space Telescope, the JWST, has received a remarkable upgrade, not from astronauts or hardware, but from artificial intelligence. Researchers at the University of Sydney developed a software-based solution that corrected subtle image blurring in one of JWST's most sensitive instruments, restoring the telescope's precision without the need for any on-orbit servicing mission. The issue affected telescope's aperture masking interferometer, the AMI, specialized instrument designed to resolve extremely fine features when observing stars and exoplanets. Soon after operations began, scientists noted faint distortions caused by tiny electronic effects within the infrared detector. Rather than planning a complex repair mission, similar to how astronauts serviced the Hubble Space Telescope decades ago, team pursued a software-only approach. I think that's probably a good thing because I think it's a lot further out there. Two PhD researchers, Louis Desgoitz and Max Charles, created a new calibration system called Amigo that uses artificial intelligence to model the behavior of the James Webb Space Telescope's detector in space. By correcting a phenomenon known as the brighter, fatter effect, where electrical charges slightly spread between pixels, their software restored AMI's ability to produce extremely sharp, high-contrast images from millions of miles away. Applied, James Webb Space Telescope has achieved sharper-than-ever detections of faint and closely orbiting objects. The team demonstrated improved imaging of a dim exoplanet and a brown dwarf combination, or companion, orbiting the nearby star HD206893, about 133 light-years from Earth. Additional examples include high-resolution observations of Io's volcanic surface, a Wolf-Rayet and a distant black hole jet, confirming that the fix significantly boosts scientific capability. The effort highlights a growing era where software and artificial intelligence or even repair spacecraft from the ground. Instead of sending astronauts to bolt on new parts, they managed to fix things with code, said Professor Peter Tolhill of the University of Sydney. His group originally contributed the AMI instrument design for the James Webb Space Telescope. The achievement underscores both the telescope's flexibility and Australia's strong role in cutting-edge astronomical instrumentation.
CL-123.
The research has now been publicly released and peer review is underway. The software tools are being prepared for use by the broader James Webb Space Telescope science community, ensuring the telescope continues delivering unmatched views of the universe. All thanks to a clever fix developed on Earth with no spacewalks or hardware interventions required. And you can read the full article over at scitechdaily.com/how-ai-save-nasa-10-billion-web-telescope-from-blurry-vision. And we'll thank the University of Sydney and SciTech Daily for that information. And, of course, that link's over at amsatnet.com. This is Marty, WV5Y, and the Houston AmSatNet. The Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications recently added publications provided by AmSat from 1969 to 2013 to the Internet Archive. These include the vast majority of issues of the AmSat newsletter, AmSat Satellite Report, AmSat's Orbit Magazine, and the AmSat Journal for that time period. The Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications is a library of materials and collections related to amateur radio and early communications. The DLARC is funded by a significant grant from Amateur Radio Digital Communications, a private foundation, to create a digital library that documents, preserves, and provides open access to the history of this community. The Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications can be accessed at archive.org/details/DLARC. Okay, if you'd like the direct link, AmSat publications can be found at archive.org/search?query=creator(amper)3a(amper)22amsat(amper22). Issues of the AmSat Journal from 2014 to the present can be accessed by AmSat members at launch.amsat.org/the_AmSat_journal. Okay, and we want to say thanks to the Digital Library of Amateur Radio Communications for that information. The AmSat Remove Before Flight key tags are available, and yes, they are the real thing, just like what they put on the satellites. So your $20 donation goes to help fly a Fox Plus satellite, and it does include first-class postage for those in the U.S., Sorry, it's only available for those in the U.S. You can order today at www.amsat.org/product/amsat-remove-before-flight-keychain. And they're a lovely red embroidered with white lettering and logo, and they look really nice. So, it's hard to not see those and think, you should need to probably pull those before this thing goes into flight. Okay, it looks like two-line elements, or TLEs, often referred to as Keplerian elements, or just KEPs in the amateur community, are the inputs to the FGP-4 standard mathematical model of spacecraft orbits used by most amateur tracking programs. So weekly updates are completely adequate for most amateur satellites. So this is a file you download once a week into your satellite tracking program on your computer, and it'll keep all the satellites in the right locations and passing over at the right times. TLE books and files are updated daily in the first hour of the UTC day. New books and files will be posted immediately after reliable elements become available for new amateur satellites. And you can find more info over at amsat.org/Keplerian-elements-resources. And there are no additions or deletions this week to the AMSAT TLE distribution, but we want to thank Joe Fitzgerald, KM1P, AMSAT Orbital Elements Manager, for that information. All right, amateurs and others around the world may listen in on contacts between amateurs operating in schools and allowing students to interact with astronauts and cosmonauts and JAXA astronauts aboard the International Space Station. The downlink frequency on which to listen is on 145.800 MHz worldwide. And we've got Pitafi, Sandor, Evangelicus, Gymnasium, Gliquium, S. Alta Alanos, Escola, Mezzobarani in Hungary. They have a telebridge via K6DUE with NA1SS, and they got to speak with Johnny, Jonathan, Kim, KJ5HKP, and they already did. The contact was successful on Friday, 11/7/2025 at 0813 UTC. Okay, we've got the Colegio del Faro in Benavides, Tigre, Argentina, direct via LU-4BB. The ISS call sign scheduled to be NA1SS, and crew member is Mike Fink, KE5AIT. The ERS mentor is DE3TBD. The contact is a go for Tuesday, 11/11/2025 at 1818 UTC. Space Academy of Astrocosmos, Baku, Azerbaijan, has a contact direct via 4K4AZE. The ISS call sign is scheduled to be OR4ISS, and the crew member is Mike Fink, KE5AIT. The ERS mentor is SP3QFE, and the contact is Sunday, 11/16/2025 at 1453 UTC. And lastly, we've got a couple of Russian schools that are still to be determined, and they're going to have contacts with RS0ISS, speaking with crew member Oleg Platonov. The ERS mentor is RV3VR, and they're going to have contacts on Tuesday, 11/18/2025 at 1010 UTC, and Thursday, 11/20/2025 at 1450 UTC. Many times, the school may make a last-minute decision to do a live stream or run into a last-minute glitch requiring a change of the URL, but those folks at ARIS may not get the URL in time for publication, so you can always check live.aris.org to see if the school is live streaming. And as always, if there's an EVA, a docking or an undocking, the ARIS radios are turned off as part of the safety protocol.
This is the W5BSA repeater.
Okay, the crossband repeater continues to be active on the ISS. It's on 145.990 MHz up with a field tone of 67. And then you can listen on 437.800 MHz down. If any crew member is so inclined, all they have to do is pick up the mic, raise the volume up, and they can talk on the crossband repeater. So give a listen. You just never know. And the packet operations continue to be active on 145.825 MHz up and down, at least till the SSTV event starts. And HamSTV is configured. It's on
2395.00
MHz. And note, all the times are approximate. It's recommended you do your own orbital prediction to get the times for your location, or start listening about 10 minutes before our listed time. And the latest info on the operation mode can be found at www.aris.org/current-status-of-iss-stations.html. And the latest list of frequencies in use can be found at www.aris.org/contact-v-iss.html. And we'll thank Charlie Safana, AJ9N, one of the ARIS operation team mentors, for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSatNet. Let's see, we've got some AmSat ambassador activities. Clint Bradford, K6LCS, says, think a 75-minute presentation on working the easy satellites would be appropriate for your club or event. Let me know by emailing Clint at k6lcsclint@gmail.com or calling Clint at 909-999-7287. Clint's never given the exact same show twice. Each of his 150-plus presentations so far has been customized and tailored to his audiences. Okay, we're down to the end of the year, getting there, so we don't have any scheduled events still currently for this year. But if you'd like to find out more information or maybe to become an AmSat ambassador where you can provide presentations, demonstrate communicating through amateur satellites, and host information tables at club meetings, hamfests, conventions, maker fairs, and other events, you can just go over to www.amsat.org/ambassador. And we will thank Bo Lowry, W4FCL, the director of the AmSat Ambassador Program, for that information. Hey, if you'd like to fly your colors on your own grid expedition, you can get an AmSat car flag and other neat stuff from our Zazzle store. And if you do, 25% of the purchase price of each product goes towards keeping amateur radio in space. All right, well, we're looking forward to tomorrow's launch, hopefully, at about 10 till 2 in the afternoon, I think our time is Central Time. My new Glenn 2s. So launch was a couple days ago, got postponed due to weather. But look forward to Blue Origin, hopefully having a successful launch. And we're getting to see New Glenn 2 deliver a couple of Mars satellites from NASA. They're going to be going to Mars, so we'll hope things work out on that tomorrow. AMSAT proudly recognizes two new operators who have earned the prestigious Gridmaster Award. That's David Fisher, KGOD, achieved Gridmaster Award number 77 on October the 19th, 2025, followed by Gene Egami, KJ4M, who earned Award 78 on October 22nd, 2025. And the Gridmaster Award honors amateur satellite operators successfully confirmed contacts from all 488 Maidenhead grid squares across lower continental United States. This is definitely a challenge requiring exceptional operating skill, patience, and commitment. These accomplishments reflect not only the determination of the recipients, but also the strong support and activity of the portable operators who make rare grid contacts possible. With only a small number of amateurs having received this milestone, each new award represents a significant achievement within the satellite community. We want to say congratulations to David and Gene on reaching this elite level of satellite operating excellence. And also thanks to Bruce Page, KK5VO, AMSAT Director of Contests and Awards, for that information. Okay, Elon Musk's Starlink has made satellite internet service free to residents in Jamaica and the Bahamas following widespread communications outages caused by Hurricane Melissa. Starlink says the temporary measure is intended to support emergency response and recovery efforts as infrastructure repairs continue. Although service fees are waived through the end of November, new users will still need to purchase a Starlink terminal if they don't already have one. The company also enabled a direct-to-cell service in Jamaica via Liberty Caribbean, allowing mobile phones to connect directly to Starlink satellites during terrestrial network disruptions. Starlink's low Earth orbit constellation provides lower latency than traditional geostationary satellite internet, making it useful in disaster environments where real-time communications is critical, especially for first responders and emergency coordinators. SpaceX has offered similar emergency access before, including after major flooding in Texas and during Hurricanes Helene and Milton in 2024, reflecting an ongoing pattern of deploying satellite support during major disasters. And ANS thanks USA Today for that information. Okay, well, in addition to regular membership, AMSAT offers membership to societies, which is a recognized group, club, or organization. Primary and secondary school students are eligible for primary and secondary school students are now eligible for membership for free. Membership for students is now free from kindergarten all the way up through master's degree at age 25 or so. So enjoy a free membership to the Houston or the AMSAT organization. So be sure and check that out. You can contact AMSAT.org for additional membership information. Well, we do have annual and lifetime terms. So stay safe out there, 73. Remember to help keep amateur radio in space. That's from this week's ANS editor, Mitch Ahrensthorf, AD0HJ. And that's MAHRENSTORFF at AMSAT.org. So I hope everybody enjoyed this week's version of the Houston AMSAT.net. Stay safe. Keep playing, making lots of satellite contacts, playing with those radios. Hope everybody had a happy Veterans Day. And look forward to catching everybody next week. So from Andy, W5ACM, Bruce, KK5DO, out there in Roman Forest, myself, Marty, WV5Y, in Northwest Houston, we say 7-3 for this week from the Houston AMSAT.net.